Hi, and welcome to the first proper issue of Creative Conversations, the show that talks to the artists and organisations that work in West Dorset, to record the creative productivity within the area in the lead up to 2012 and the Olympics. This week, I've come to the studio of PVA Media Lab in Bridport, where I'm joined by Julie Penfold, the co-founder and current director of PVA Media Lab, also known as Lab Culture, with additional comments by David Rogers, another of the co-founders of PVA Media Lab and also a current director. Let's start at PVA's beginning. Actually, how long is it now you have been going?
Easily 17 years ago, informally,
right.
Group of artists in Bridport in Dorset, which is a rural market town.
Quite an achievement then, for an organisation, small community-focused organisation to be in existence for 17 years.
Well, firstly, I wouldn't necessarily describe this as a community-focused organisation.
Okay.
So I might have to challenge you on
Go
that.
Go on then, so how would you describe yourself then? A global focus?
I would describe this organisation as artist-led, and that's always been at its core. We do live within a particular place in a community, and we do work with people in that community, but we're not a community. I wouldn't say that we're a community organisation.
Do you feel that you've affected the community of Bridport in your 17 years of existence?
Yeah. I was thinking about some of the work we've done with opening up possibilities for artists who are based locally, and also for young people and other creative people, in not just in the town but in the county and in the southwest.
I probably use that term community focus because I probably think of your later projects now being quite like your film, the Young People's Film Club.
Yeah, but we were talking about the origins.
Yeah.
So the origins were four people, as I recall, having a chat about doing something. And some of us were fairly new to the area and we were trying to find out, I suppose, through making a project happen, what was going on and who was here.
That
kind of resulted in a number of projects which took actually new audiences into the studio spaces and workplaces of artists who were resident in rural West Dorset.
And I would actually say that the project that took new audiences into galleries, into studio spaces of artists, such as John Skinner over in Abbotsbury, small Disneyland village around the corner, was actually, they were really successful. And that they included national artists coming down and talking, like Eve Bunting,
mm-hmm.
which was, I remember, as being a highlight of the talks as well.
Okay. Actually, that one in Abbotsbury, we had Rod Dickinson as well, talking about crop circles and UFOs. So we're not just talking about painting, talking about that whole time in the early 90s when crop circles became, you know, this kind of there was a lot of mystique around where they were coming from and who was making them.
I would also add to that that, in fact, at that time, I think the surrounding area, Bridport and the surrounding area, was in fact more creative than it is now.
Some of the key artists' activities that PVA have been involved in the last 15 years, could you, which ones have stuck in your mind?
Okay, well, I mean, it's important to mention the idea of offering space and time to artists from all over. And that was achieved through a residency programme which goes by the name of Lab Culture, still exists. Was the one of the most influential models, if you like, of support for artists in the whole of the UK in its time. Since then, there have been a lot of
influence.
It has influenced a lot of other
people's
practice. Mm-hmm. The beauty of Lab Culture was that it could be plopped into a number of different locations. So what you have is a mobile lab, which went to many, diverse places, including Artsway in the New Forest, up to Vivid in Birmingham, we've been to Singapore, but mostly to other, what I regard as artist-led spaces.
So one of the things that's probably difficult then, the lab cultures are about very much about process, which I think PVA is very much about.
Mm.
Is there a difficulty in the fact that you don't really end up with this end product, and the 80s and 90s being about product and marketing a thing?
No, not at all. We do have a product. We've got an archive, which is a fascinating collection of work that artists were making with new technology over a time span of maybe 10 years or something. In some cases, we've still got the technology to play that work as well. We haven't sold it all off on eBay yet.
But the problem is, who sees... So that archive is what, in a filing cabinet?
There's about four shelves of boxes in the cupboard behind me. Some of it, it's fair to say, has been remastered, so digitised, and because if you think about the time frame, some of those works were made on, for example, moving image work on Hi8. Who knows what Hi8 is anymore? Who even knows what a mini disc recorder is anymore? So I'll give you an example of a community-facing project, if you like to call it that, which was commissioned in 1999-2000, which is, its working title is A Virtual Map of Bridport. And it used what was then very, very new software, QuickTime, to stitch together about 8,000, maybe more, still images to make a map of Bridport that you could, quotes, walk into. And we still show that occasionally. It comes out, it can be seen. We've put that on the equipment that it was made on, an iMac from I don't know when, and stuck that in the corner in a pub, for example, for people to, like a bit like a pub game almost. So that work has a relevance, historical, whatever you want to call it. It you can still watch it and it's meaningful. Just because it's in the cupboard on a shelf doesn't mean that it doesn't have a life beyond the making.
That's the point, so it's still there and it's got seen.
It's still there and it still gets seen and could still be seen. I mean, at the moment, there's some developments going on in Bridport, renovating the town hall and a number of other old buildings coming back into life. And I see a project like that has a permanent home in a space like that, and in the museum archive, obviously.
I found out recently that museum in Dorchester on the High Street has got Alfred Wallace paintings in their archives. Mm. Yeah, all there stored away for generations to come, but...
No one sees them.
Mm. And it's a difficulty because to have work seen, you need the funds and you need a space.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, we could talk forever about the fact that there's no viable space for this kind of thing in this county of Dorset and what we're going to do about it and the work that we've been doing in partnership and collaboration to try and improve on that. As we speak, with our partner organisations in the county, across like three projects, we've been involved in bringing in excess of £250,000 of new money into the county to support arts and culture.
Mm.
And that's a huge success.
But for myself, knowing PVA a little bit, then even I haven't got a sense of that.
Mm.
As an organisation, and I'm wondering, is that something that you're failing to do to promote PVA as a local organisation? Because I understand what you say about it being artist-led and having an international profile, but I still see you as a rural arts organisation.
Mm. Well, as the Arts Council will no doubt tell you if you ask them, we're unique in Dorset.
But apart from that, the out of the labs, a number of pieces of work that artists started on are now being nationally toured.
Yeah.
And seen as very actually relevant pieces of work for today. But that the seed of that was in a, came from a lab. You can name a few names if you want.
I can name some names, but I think it's really important to say about this process that the lab is open to anybody, really. It's not about a specific art form. It's not about a particular way of practicing. You know, it's about bringing up to 10 people together in a room for a period of time and seeing what happens. So it has included writers, poets. My favourite is an aerialist, if you know what that is.
No, what's
an aerialist? someone who is works a trapeze.
Okay.
Basically, someone who worked with carnival and puppets, dancers. You know, everything really. Philosophers, I think. One of the artists that Dave is referring to is a guy called Paul Howard, who in this room, again, made a piece very early on, which was using Photoshop to capture X number of slides and then animate them. So you make what is a painting or a photograph into an animated work. And that relationship is... Yeah, we've had that relationship with Paul for a number of years. I mean, he left the country and went to Australia for 3 years, I think, and we're still in contact, and now we're supporting a touring exhibition. And that relationship has enabled us to support his work, which can be something as easy as the loan of a camera, for example, or some studio space. So artists who come and do a residency like Lab Culture don't just then disappear, they maintain and we maintain that relationship. That's very important to the process.
Well, as a particular piece of art, I was talking about Taz, actually, and the work she was doing with, I forget what it's called, the Stephen Lawrence. Because that started at the lab, didn't it? I think all the beginnings of it were...
She came with the idea that she was developing a piece of work which was prompted by the killing of Stephen Lawrence, and yet she was then able to go on and get funding to tour the work. But to make the work, she dipped into the network of Lab Culture artists and facilitators and expertise, and she made a what is basically a sound installation, which is triggered by the audience intervention. That toured a year... I think that finished touring about a year ago, actually.
But going back to what you were saying about community thing, I mean, don't forget, New Networks, was that what it was called? The first road show that PDA put on was just a case of actually piling all the computers into the back of a van, driving them to a local space or art centre.
Before the days of laptops, don't forget.
And inviting local people to come for the day, basically, to experience digital approaches to work.
So has there been a conflict between local artists? Because you're working, again, it's like, it's quite a national or even international remit that the artists who come to work at Lab Cultures. And is there any kind of conflict between that and local? I mean, are you very well known in the Dorset scene for artists as an arts organisation?
Yeah, but I wouldn't... we're not an arts centre. We're not a drop-in centre. We're not a training centre. We don't have an open-door policy. I think that can be... it has been problematic. But... that's because there's one there, you know, when we've been in a position to be a funded organisation, because bear in mind we haven't always been a funded organisation, then you can have regular people on the books working as staff, But we've only ever had at most 1.5 part-time people to actually regularly get paid to run things. Everybody else is doing stuff on voluntary time or as freelancers. That's the model. So we're not a... We can't compare ourselves in any way to, let's say, an art centre which has maybe as few as 4 full-time staff. We don't have the same capacity.
No.
There's certain things that you cannot do, and then I suppose that often, that probably is confusing for people.
Because that managing expectations is a difficult thing to manage.
Mm.
And local artists, if they have heard of you, would possibly see... So that you have been a funded organisation and you're a local organisation, but they see you working outside.
And I think that's a wider issue. I think everybody needs to really think about their practice and what they want to do and then go out and find the means to do it. And you don't rely on funded, or you know, you shouldn't rely on the existence of funded organisations such as this one to just help to do that for you. And obviously, the landscape as we know it now has changed radically, and that is no longer an option. It really isn't an option, sadly.
So the local artists, if they wanted to actually apply to come on a lab or come to the studio and work, it was always open to that.
So this idea then, so being an artist is an incredibly precarious career.
Mm.
Have you any advice to give artists on sustainability of their practice? That's a big question.
Learn to do everything.
David, what about?
Advice on
sustainability.
Surviving as an artist.
Yeah. Because you've worked with artists nationally who have, sounds like, gone on to be quite successful and are earning a living. You know, you think, is there any nuggets of, like, do everything is because you're a one-man band.
Know the right people. Talk to the people who matter. You know, it's the same as in any business. It's no different from any other business, really, is it? Actually, I think network. Yeah, you know, it's really hard because it costs not only time but money often to do these things. Mm. I actually have great sympathy for anyone graduating at the moment if they've determined that they're going to set out in the world of art and become and they are an artist. Where do they go?
Because they're leaving with debt straight away.
Firstly, they've got huge debt. Secondly, it's very hard to get useful work. Thirdly, the resources such as the ones we've been able to offer are diminished. And fourthly, actually, probably nobody even tells you that this kind of thing exists in the first place. And I think that might go back to answering your question that even in a small town, people don't know that you exist.
Which comes back to networking and marketing.
Yeah.
Because that advice is very business-focused, really.
You have to get real, I'm sorry to say. You know, you know, maybe some people can hack it and live in this beautiful rural place and sort of enjoy the kind of bucolic, laid-back existence, but that isn't an option that's available to everybody.
It's actually harder being in a rural place.
Yeah.
Because the art world is so London-centric.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an interesting example. We've had visitors from overseas, and the funniest one is a guy who came from Novosibirsk, and he was on a trip with easily 30, 40 people from across Russia, sponsored by the British Council. And they asked organisations in the UK to offer hosting, and he ended up here in Bridport. He had no idea how far it was from London. This thing all the time is people come from overseas and they think that London is the place to be. You know, that's the point I'm trying to make. So it was quite clearly a frustration when it was realised that to get to London would take probably 3 hours, and then what do you do? who do you know, where do you go? And the same from other artists that we've hosted from Singapore, from Israel, from Croatia, from, I don't know, many other places. They all seem to think that London is the focus, and I think not entirely true, really.
But it is...
If you want a commercial big gallery exhibition, but there's a whole network of other means and support that can help you get your work seen and have a voice.
Well, not only commercially, I think that there's a, depending on the sort of work that you're presenting, there's also an audience thing.
Yeah, we know it.
Yeah, we put things on where hundreds of people have turned up, we put things on where 5 people have turned up. I think we went to the Ansard recently, and 30 people turned up. Didn't go to the opening. I bet there were a lot more because they were running a free bus from London and they had a barbecue. But that's because that's a financial aspect of it. We can't afford to do that.
But to get a bus to Bridport is very different to get a bus from London to Southampton.
Yes.
I mean, on one hand, I suppose with the audience idea is you don't have so much competition. Well, London, there's, you're inundated with activities to compete against your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, as we know, that if you're in London, it's like talking about yesterday at the Cafe Otto. You go there, you go to London, you go there in the evening, and the next day you'll go to Soundfjord because it's all part of the same thing. That is actually quite difficult here when we put things on that are longer than one day or one couple of hours. To actually get people to go home and then return the next day just doesn't work like it would in the culture of a city.
And you have places like Cafe Otto to display work, which you haven't here.
Sometimes I do think we can be our own worst enemy. For example, in March next year, we're going to have residency and an audio lab and an event in Dorset, really, in rural Dorset, in the middle of nowhere, at a place called Kingcombe. It has an allure, you know, it's a really lovely, it's a fantastic space, very interesting place, it has facilities, and yet, who the hell is going to know where to come? You know, we're going to have to work really, really hard to get people there. So, what do you do? You know, as you were mentioning earlier, do you put a big name at the top of the list, which will draw people around here? People will recognise that name. People from our network further afield will recognise that name and come just for that. If it's if it's true to our tradition and it's a bunch of artists who are really interesting and we're interested in and want to support.
So it comes back to, like you say, is networks and marketing. The same thing applies to PVA as applies to an individual artist to make sustainable career.
Yeah, that's what we have to do.
So initially you were an unfunded collection of artists that used to meet together and you'd get little bit of money to do projects.
Or we did it with no money.
You were match funding away by giving the old libraries a space.
No, that didn't even come into it, to be honest.
To be used. But you used the space at the old library.
Yeah.
But surely, in a way, that was funded in kind by an organisation, by the council that owned the property.
Do you know what? I don't think those terms were even used in those days. If I'm honest, people didn't talk about it in that way. So it was never perceived as being support by the local authority. Then, of course, when we started to look at keeping the building in use and the work that would have to be done, and we then worked with all those agencies, you know, town, district, county council, heritage, I don't know if it was called, probably wasn't even called Heritage Lottery then, heritage, the local MP and other interested parties, we actually did put a business plan together, and we had architects on board, and we did a feasibility study to turn what I call the Literary and Scientific Institute, commonly known as the old library, into an artist's space and a hub with studios and all sorts of other fantastic rooms and facilities. And that was a model for its time. And unfortunately, the plan became too difficult to put into place, having raised £50,000 and then £250,000. It kind of fell apart for reasons that we won't go into. No.
But you'd been in there a few years before that.
Yeah.
You'd been in there, for a few years before that, become much more formalised.
And we'd used the building for a number of what were really edgy, exciting, experimental events. You know, stuff that would never have been seen, really, in Bridport otherwise.
And in a way, the times have changed. That type of, like you say, opportunities for younger artists nowadays is just not available.
No.
Because for a local authority to say, oh, there's a building, just go and use it.
Mm. It's very hard to do.
They wouldn't say.
No. I'm not sure that they did say, to be honest.
Well, you had the keys.
We did have the keys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you changed the locks.
No, we didn't change the locks. That's really funny.
So somebody gave you the keys to say, look, here, come and use that.
They did. You know, I feel sad for the fact that that building has stood empty, in particular now, for nearly 10 years. There are plans afoot to start that process all over again.
So that led on to you becoming a regular funded arts
organisation. So, on the back of doing that work in very interesting ways, we came to the attention of the Arts Council, and we were given what was then a substantial amount of money, about £70,000, I think it was, to run Lab Culture for the first time. In Bridport, we ran it in the Literary and Scientific Institute, and it was tremendously exciting. Then we were adopted onto the regularly funded organisation portfolio.
Because it was exciting, because at that time, what you were offering, digital media, is so common and in use today that people find it, it's
they
hard
don't
to think
understand.
Back
yeah.
at that time,
yeah.
how computers and
yeah.
digital technology was just alien to so many, especially artists.
Oh, God, yeah. There was one artist, who will not be named, who was so excited by the idea of making a film with a proper camera that we realised that, you know, the camera was no longer in where it should be. The camera had actually been taken back to where they were staying for the night in the hotel across the street. Because she didn't want to be parted from basically. That kind of excitement. I'm hanging on to this, you know. Mm. I'm really going to... Now I've got this opportunity, I'm going to do stuff with it. You know, nobody's going to separate me from this piece of equipment. Because you can imagine, can't you? Mm. I mean, now, the prevailing view is that, oh, well, everyone's got a camera, everyone's got a laptop, everyone's got access, but in fact they don't.
But that cost of that technology...
Yeah.
You know, like now you can get little cameras for...
Yeah.
You know, 50, 100... Mm. Well, then...
Which are... Yeah, as good.
As good, yeah. Well, then it was thousands of pounds.
Mm.
And that sort of free, random access to experiment with that technology, which comes back to this idea of a lab culture, backed up by technical facilitators to help them realise.
It was very, very exciting. Oh, and must pick you up on technical facilitators as well.
Go on, then. As facilitators. Because they were more than technical.
We're not talking technicians.
No.
We're talking artists with a particular practice of their own who were sharing that and supporting their peers. So true collaboration and actually the giving over of information and expertise to enable work to be made.
So creative collaboration amongst
absolutely
a group of artists from dispersed art forms would come together in a small space with other artists that use digital technology to create.
Mm.
Well, not necessarily create, because at the end, the other thing I picked up about lab culture wasn't an end product, but it was more about that process.
It was.
Of experimenting.
And, you know, that was there were no expectations placed on those individual artists to make a piece of work, but of course, you put a bunch of people in a space and they are going to make something and they want to finish it, because part of the setup is that they know on the last day they're going to have an opportunity to show what they've done and to talk about it. And I think it's important to talk about that, because again, rarely do people have that opportunity to put their ideas up there and get feedback and from their peers, and sometimes be, you know, brutally challenged on what they're doing, find a justification for what they're doing.
Because once they leave university, then that doesn't happen.
No. It wasn't that horrendous. I used the word brutally. It wasn't that horrendous. But, you know, quite interesting conversations, let's say.
Well, especially during the process, I imagine the interesting conversations would have happened in a room.
And the whole kind of learning around, oh, right, I've been kind of doing it that way and you do it that way. So, interesting. You know, just stuff that you soak up by being around other people.
And you can see why people picked up on running that in other places.
Yes, absolutely. That particular strand of activity supported easily over 200 people, individuals, some of whom names pop up all over the place now. And that might well, in some cases, definitely was their first experience of being an artist in a space where they were supported, encouraged, whatever you want to call it, to do something with technology.
But the trouble about that as a brand then I see is that because technology has moved on so fast, then suddenly the technology side of that lab culture is not so relevant.
No, I mean, and I also, you know, again, we have to be clear that this is, as you say, about the process, the creative process. The fact that there was computers in the room really is neither here nor there.
No, at the time it was there because it was so much new and fresh.
Mm.
But now the process and the conversations around use of technology is probably the more important part.
Yes. I mean, it was just the means to an end, really.
Thank you for listening to Creative Conversations by me, Joe Stevens. Hope you come back next week when you can hear the concluding part of my conversation with Julie at PVA. If you'd like to find out more about PVA, you can check their website at www.pva.org.uk. If you'd like to find out more about this show, you can see the blog at creativedialogue.wordpress.com.